going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
What's up? Welcome back to Playtesting. It's episode 198. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Subscribe. Rate 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on the socials at Playtesting. Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and find us on YouTube on the WEI channel. Subscribe, rate, or hit the thumbs up. We got the Playtesting playlist there. You know the drill. Here with Sammy, here with Pat, and here with my dad. Long story short, I just moved, and the internet's not working. And they're coming back this week to fix it, but we got a post for a Monday show. We tried to make it work, went back home, had a Passover Seder tonight, went back home, tried to make it work with a mobile hotspot, didn't work. Tried to use the Xfinity Wi-Fi thing that they have everywhere. That didn't work. Tried to do it on my phone. It worked for 5 minutes. And then I couldn't hear these guys. It sounded like they were underwater. And then what did you say, Pat?
I said it sounded like you're talking under 10 feet of gravel. Yeah. It just sounded so bad.
So here I am at my dad's. So I figure we love my dad.
Oh yeah.
We love Judge Gordon here. You're making your debut.
Good to be here.
Yes.
I think your problems have more to do with the fourth cup of wine than anything else.
or do they have more so to do with the lack of offense with our beloved Red Sox?
There were some good signs today.
What good signs did we see?
Bregman had a good game. Story had a great game. And Crochet looked terrific.
That's not what I'm used to hearing from you. You're usually the negative nugget. They just lost two or three of the White Sox.
They did, but today was a new day.
This is not authentic.
This is a charade. The White Sox won the World Series only 20 years ago. So
it's true. It's true. Only 20 years ago with Mark Burley and Paul Konerko, the ghosts of whom still haunted the Red Sox.
I was worried. Troubled by Raffy going 0-for-4. Didn't like that.
Tomorrow's a new day.
Tomorrow's a new day to play baseball in a minor league ballpark against the Tampa Bay Rays. And we have, how many starting pitchers left do we have? right now.
1.5 or something like that.
Yeah.
Ballpark named after the Prince of Darkness.
Yep.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Should be fun. But, yeah, I don't know. Well, we should. Thanks for making your debut. Thanks,
for guys.
Your... I'm going to put my headphones in.
Good to see you, Judge Gordo.
Love you, Dad. Thanks for letting me record here. I'm at my dad's. He's nice enough to let me record here. It's late at night. It's like 10:30 at night. So shout out to my dad and his wife, Diane. They're the best. But yeah, I mean, let's be real for what we saw in this series. It just, I mean, they lost by 10 runs to the Chicago White Sox in the first game. They got walked off by the White Sox in the second game. And the third game, they barely eked away with a win after almost blowing a 2-0 lead and a no-hitter in the eighth inning. So, I mean, there's some positives to take away. I've been concerned with Trevor Story. I mean, let's be real here, for years now, but certainly this year, and he had a good game today. We can talk about him a little bit, but I mean, it's been a lot of bad for a week now. Today's Story's home run today was the first home run they've hit since last Sunday. Like, that Wally head was collecting dust.
Yeah. I want to run back what I said when we first tried to record this. The Blue Jays series, there were a lot of little things you could point to. Crazy weather, third coldest game in Fenway history in one of those. You saw some good pitching. Jose Berríos, he's good. He's been good for a while. Chris Bassett, very solid for a while as well. Hoffman coming out of the bullpen, he's nasty. Yimi Garcia, nasty. So, you know, they had some good play. They've got good players. You know, it happens. You have a bad series here and there, and that was a bad series against Toronto. But this, against the White Sox, this is a team that might break the record for most losses in a single major league season, surpassing the 2024 White Sox. So that's how bad these guys are, potentially historically bad. And the Red Sox didn't just lose. They got boat raced in that first game. Double-digit loss. Gross. Game two, walked off by a kid who looks like he's 17 years old. Something Baldwin. I don't even know the guy's name. Chapman was dominating that at bat thing, throws a cookie right down the middle. Bang. Game over. And then Sunday they win, and I feel like I can't even. The description I had on Twitter was that if the Red Sox were like a young, cool dude, they're going to a house party, and they're like, oh, I'm going to be the coolest guy at the house party. That's the games against the White Sox. The Red Sox, they think they're going to win all of them. Great. But then the Red Sox are at the house party, and they drink way too much. They get way too drunk, and they embarrass themselves in front of everybody at the party. And now everyone's like, what's wrong with you? You're not cool like we thought you were. But then the Red Sox on the last day, in the morning, they're like, oh, I got to clean up the house and make breakfast for everyone because I've done so many wrong things. I want to try to make amends. And that's basically what Crochet and Trevor Story did today. They tried to make Red Sox fans breakfast after being drunk and crazy the two nights before. But still, you don't want to, you're eating that breakfast and you're like, oh man, you said some crazy things last night. I don't know if I can just forgive you for this. So that's kind of how I feel watching this Red Sox win as we record on Sunday. It's like, great, but still, I don't know. I'm not going to forget.
Point blank, if they won today 35-0, I'd still be mad.
Yep.
Like, there's no excuse to lose a series to the Chicago White Sox. Realistically, a series you should have swept, bare minimum, won 2 out of 3. Outside, like, the starting pitching was pretty good outside of Newcomb. Bullpen was fine. Chapman had his first blown save. Even that didn't really concerned me too much. Whitlock gave me a heart attack today as we record on Sunday. Got out of it clean. They obviously won. The offense was just beyond abysmal. And I mean, the guys who were throwing for the White Sox, if you told me, take them out of uniform, they all just look like high school history teachers. Like, there's not one guy I was like, oh, I know him. He's very good.
With the most generic names you've ever heard, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Bob Smith threw 7 shutout on Thursday. Yeah. Like, it's, dude, it's fucking crazy. And my thing is, you had, I'll give it to Chapman because he went back to back, shut it down today, whatever. Chapman, Crochet, Story, and I guess maybe you could say Bregman. But realistically, it's Story, Crochet, Chapman. Those are the three guys in the entire organization who showed up to play in Chicago, which is insane. That's nuts.
Hey, Romy. Romy played well.
Romy didn't played get well. Romy. Yeah. Romy played
I'll
well.
Give it to Romy.
You know I agree,
well?
Pat.
Very quickly. You know who didn't play well? Blake Sable.
Oh, my God. Oh, can my we talk God. About this?
Yeah.
No, please, no.
They made five errors in the first game. A couple of them were catcher's interferences, and the White Sox decided they could just – it didn't matter. Who they saw Tyler Heineman steal second base on Sunday, and they were like, oh, my God. We can do whatever they want, whatever we want. Like, these guys are a bunch of just, like, no-name kids. It's whatever. Get on first. You just go. And they did. And oh, my God, when Carlos Narvaez got hit in the head with that throw today and looked like he was, like, a little bit shaken up by it, how terrifying. Like, I know they just signed Yasmani Grandal. Yasmani Grandal is not ready to play in Major League games. And even when he is ready, like, who knows if he's still good enough to play at this level. It's like, we complained a lot about Connor Wong. And, like, obviously they need to improve the catcher position long term. But, oh my God, you saw, like, your life flashed before your eyes when Narvaez Dude. Got hit in the head. And it was like, oh my God, are we going to have to see Blake Sable play catcher 5 days a week?
A lot of people excited about the Yasmani Grandal stuff. He used to be good, but look what he did last year with the Pirates. I hope we don't see much Yasmani Grandal. And it's funny, well, dark funny, that we were all kind of ripping on Connor Wong, like, oh, he's not hitting. The defense looks a little bit better, but it's not good enough. Now we're like, please come back, him. Connor Wong.
We need
we love you, Connor Wong.
Dude. Ugh. Dude, there was a throw down to second on Friday, and I genuinely thought for shits and gigs, Blake Sable was playing catcher with his offhand. Like, it was a muffin down to second base, and I was like, why is he throwing with his left hand in a real MLB game? And it came out of his arm at 41.7 miles an hour. That's not
you know
a fact.
Funny?
That's not a fact, but it's believable.
I believe.
Yeah. He was the only guy who had an RBI in that first game, right? He was the one guy at the sack fly. I'm pretty
oh
sure
my
he's
God.
Yeah, he did.
Oh my God, because I was ready to send a tweet just like not ripping the guy, but like I was ready. I had a joke tweet ready to send for if he struck out, which like yes, he can't throw the ball and he keeps getting catcher's interference calls, but he's also striking out every at bat too. So I was ready to go with a tweet and it's like, oh, I can't send this after a sack fly. The
yeah,
one
yeah,
run we score.
I love that. Yeah, he's bad at throwing and he's not a great framer or a blocker, but he's also really bad at hitting. I feel bad for, like, you know, we just have this documentary about the human side of baseball players. He looked very frustrated back there, so I don't want to rip on the guy too much, but God damn.
It wasn't good.
That was ugly, man.
But,
no more. No
but,
more.
But he's Troy Polamalu's cousin.
He is Troy Polamalu's cousin, and you can never take that away from him.
Nope. Back to the Romy thing for a second, because this was a conversation. So Rob and I, Bradfo and I, on radio this weekend on Saturday, we talked a lot about Tristan Casas. The phone lines were, like, I've never seen the phone lines this jam-packed before, all wanting to talk about the same thing. So we've got to get into the Tristan Casas discussion, and Romy Gonzalez ties in to this. So Saturday, second game of the series, Casas sits against the lefty in favor of Romy Gonzalez playing first base. Romy was on base the first three times. I believe it was a walk, and a single.
Yep.
And played good defense too, which with him at first base has been up and down. Understandably, he's learning the position still. Casas on Sunday moved to the sixth spot and Willy Abreu moved up to four. So a lot of people are going to say, oh, you know, he's not playing well and it's because of his antics. It's because he paints his nails and he sunbathes and whatever. Like, and that's why he's not playing well. I want to push all that shit out because it's stupid and it's nonsense. And by the way, I very much, like, still incredibly so believe that Tristan Casas is going to have a really good year and several really good stretches for this team. And it's crazy because I said I agreed with them playing Romy over him against the lefty. I think you, when a guy is struggling, you give him favorable matchups until he finds it. And I it's not that I don't believe he can hit lefties. I just think get him against the most favorable matchups. And then once he starts hitting, then you bench other guys. But if Romy Gonzalez is going to play against lefties, which I think he should, he's really good against lefties. Go look at the splits from last year, mid 800s OPS. Like, the guy can play. and he's athletic, play, you know, you run the bases, he's a good player. If you're going to play him, your only options to bench, assuming you're going to bench a lefty, would be Casas, Devers, Duran. That's it. And I think you could make the argument to sit Duran, and they did sit Duran in one of these games. I believe they sat him in favor of Ref Snyder and let Abreu face the lefty on Saturday. But to me, you go with the hot hand, and then if everyone's, you know, on a roll, then you have a rotation of guys and you use it to get off days. But right now, you're not benching Devers. He's played much better than Casas and Duran. To me, it's you play Abreu and you play Devers, and you know, Duran sits more than he did last year, and Casas sits, and then once they get going, you reevaluate it.
Yeah, I think the other thing on Casas is it's not like when Rafi was 0-for-21. He doesn't look lost at the plate. He's just not getting hits. One thing, because I was curious, because there's been probably 3 or 4 games that he's gone over, and he has like 2 or 3 legitimately hard hit balls. As of right now, this is updated as of today on Sunday night as we record. 86th percentile in launch angle, sweet spot, and bat speed. 70th percentile in barrel. The rest of those, the exit velo, the hard hit, the squared up, those numbers are going to get there as long as those numbers are maintained. He's just been kind of unlucky and then also not really swinging at the best pitches so far. I agree, Gordo. I'm fully convinced that we're going to get some form of a breakout. I don't know. I'm not as maybe adamant as I was that he's a future all-star first baseman, not just because of how he's got off to this season, just in general, but he's going to be a legit four or five hole hitter, 30 home run pop. Like, it's going to get figured out. But for right now, I agree. You got to get him favorable matchups to let him figure it out.
Yeah, and you see a lot of people complain when he gets benched. And if he were on a heater and had a mid-800s OPS and we're in August and Cora's benching him in a game that you kind of need, then I'd be a little bit miffed at it. But he's ice cold right now. You're not going to get him going by putting him in difficult matchups. You want to play the matchups like both of you just said, favorable matchups for him. That's what will get him hot. And until then, you have a guy like Romy, who career-wise, his full career, he played for the White Sox a little bit, in case you didn't know that, 822 OPS versus lefties. And he's gotten better. So that's not a bad backup plan while Casas is scuffling a bit. Not to mention, by the way, about Romy, sprint speed roughly in the 90th percentile. So that's kind of your identity, the Red Sox, the run-in Red Sox with Duran and Story both stealing a ton of bases. Add Romy into that. Seydon, too. Got to give him his credit. So I don't mind Cora early on going a little bit with the matchups. I think the freaking out from people is so ridiculous. It's so like we got to act like we've been here before. I think Cora knows what he's doing with getting these guys going. He talks all the time about the importance of taking a day off, and people roll their eyes at that. I would defer to the major leaguer, Alex Cora, on stuff like that. That's something you can't quantify, and that's when you just say, look, this is the manager. He's being paid a lot. We got to put our trust in him. He's here. He's locked in. So, this is the long way of me saying, yes, Romy should play against lefties, but as we get later into the season, I think those opportunities will shrink a bit.
Yeah, it's because Casas is going to get going. It's weird. Yep. Like, the argument that I feel like the three of us are making right now, and we all kind of feel, it feels like we're aligned with it, is that we don't mind that he's getting maybe sort of more off days than he otherwise would and has in the past when he's been cooking with it. But he's obviously struggling. He's in between with his swings, like you can see it. But also at the same time, we think he's going to be really good. So it's not like a get this guy the fuck out of town or anything like that. Like, you see people who think that this guy sucks and like will reference that second half in 2023 where he had an OPS over 1,000 and was like a top three hitter in the American League. Like, I reference that all the time and people say, it's been almost 2 years and whatever. Like, even last year, it didn't feel like Casas ever got it going. He still had a 121 OPS plus, 21% above league average as a hitter when he never even really had it going. So let's defer to the large data sample size here and understand that the guy who has been 20, 30, and at times way higher percent, better than league average as a hitter, and has hit lefties too. And his career's hit lefties better than righties. Although, I mean, let's be real, that probably doesn't continue. He's going to end up destroying right-handed pitching. But yeah, the larger set of data says that that's the guy that's going to emerge. You got to let him do his thing. I hope they're letting him be himself and go about it in the way that he wants to, because the worst thing you can do is to try to make him regimented and fit him to a plan that's not really, because he's going to go about things his own way. He's a unique guy, and you just kind of got to let him be him, and he's going to get his way out of it. And I don't know when that's going to happen, but I'm incredibly confident that it will. And I very much believe that if you have, you know, tweets out there, takes out there, shitting on Tristan Casas and saying he should get out of town, you're going to be eating those words at some point this year.
Mm-hmm. And also, if I remember correctly, he starts off cold most of the time, and this includes minor league baseball. He's a slow starter. We've seen guys do that. Mark Teixeira was the ultimate slow starter guy when he was on the Yankees. You want to get the Yankees in April because Teixeira is going to be cold. But you get him in the summer, he's going to be hot. And that's not comparing that guy, you know, to Casas, but I just think we're not even 20 games in and people are complaining about lineups. Like, please, it's embarrassing to me. That's the kind of stuff you do late in the season when you know who is who, what you need, and you know where you are in the standings. It's not like I can't wrap my head around complaining about, like, oh, Casas gets a night off in April in the freezing fucking cold against a lefty. Like, boo-hoo.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is, especially when guys like Casas are trying to figure it out, and you have guys who like Story and Willier are hot, it makes sense to bump those guys up right now. It's early in the year. Guys take some time to get going. Casas hasn't gotten going. Rafaela has not gotten going, if he ever gets going. So when you have guys like Willier and Trevor who are hitting the leather off the ball, yeah, you hit them. You hit them four. You hit them five. You have Bregman and Devers who have been very good. You keep hitting them two and three, and then Duran is the stereotypical, like, the prototype of a leadoff guy. So he hits leadoff. Once Casas gets hitting, yeah, he'll probably bump him up to four. Story stays at five. Willier back at six. But for right now, your optimal lineup is with Casas hitting six, and that's not a knock on Casas. That's just a bump up on the other guys who have been playing really well. Come August, I think Casas is going to be in the four hole. Like, it's, you just play the hot hand. It's like any other sport. The batting order to me does not mean shit. I really don't care, because
it's not like you get like three changes a year and this is like, oh my God, they used one of their changes. Like, no, like, he could be cleaned up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Dude, can you imagine?
God, no. No. Tristan's locked in at six until October. No.
Oh no. Casas is batting ninth all year long. No, I just think that's, on social media especially, one of the most annoying trends is every time Cora puts any sort of substitute in the lineup, it's like the end of the world. It's April. It's April, dude. Oh my God.
And Sammy, crazy. I know they lost two out of three, but it's the White Sox. You should be able to play all of your bench players and beat this team. You should be able to bench Devers, Bregman, Duran, Casas can all sit, and you should still win the game. They didn't do it even with those guys.
Dude, if I see one person go, oh, if you played Duran or Casas in game two, maybe you would have. I don't want to hear it. I'm so sick of hearing about that. That and Pete Fatsy as the problem for hitting coach. Those are the two things I'm like, dude, can we stop blaming the coaches for the players playing poorly? Like, it's Major League Baseball. It's not Babe Ruth.
We have talked a lot about the offensive shortcomings. We have to talk about the defense being beyond horrendous.
Pat, before we get to the defense, I want to ask you guys a question, because I think it's valid at this point. They just lost two out of three to the White Sox. Anything's on the table. I think any complaints, if, like, anyone you want to go after, whether it's the three of us or anyone, just a fan, it's all on the table. Scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about the offense? You lost two out of three of the White Sox. I think it's a valid question.
Not nervous. No, the only thing I'm nervous about is they strike out too much, same as last year. But I think with a full season of Bregman, that'll kind of go down a little bit, even though right now they're trending poorly.
He's replacing Yoshida. Like, Yoshida was an even better not strikeout guy than Bregman. It's like,
Yoshida barely played last year.
He played what? Half played, more than half the games?
Yeah. No, that was dramatic. But he missed like half the season. I just don't think that.
No, give me a number. I don't one think to ten. It's... Give me the number. 1 to 10. How concerned are you?
2.
Pat?
I'm going 3. I think the strikeout numbers are concerning. I think there's definitely some guys who profile as big swing and miss guys. Duran, Story. Casas is tough because he strikes out a lot, but he walks a lot. But I mean, there's a lot of Rafaela. Like, there's a ton of swing and miss guys in there. And the clip that they're striking out at is not sustainable. Like, they cannot strike out this clip right now and have a successful offense. They can't do it. At the same time, though, they're still roughly a 500 team. While Casas is not playing well, Rafi is just figuring it out. Like, they'll be fine, but the strikeouts do concern me. That's a legit thing.
Yeah, I'm much more concerned with the pitching than I am the hitting. I think the hitting will figure itself out. It's the Red Sox. They always hit. I'm the pitching is. We don't have to discuss it now, but the pitching is what worries me.
Last year, they were very mid offensively. OPS plus, they were pretty average. I mean, to me...
Didn't they score the 10th most runs in the league?
Yeah, but they play in a very favorable offensive park, though. So, like, you got to... if you adjust it to the ballpark. But yeah, they were top 10 offense by run production. To me, I teeter between 4 and 5 in terms of my concern. Because with the lineup that's out there, with the players they have out there right now, I think there's a couple of guys at the back of that lineup that you really can't expect much of anything from. And it requires the guys at the top to be super consistent producers, and they just haven't been that. But longer term, as you go throughout the season, like, I think those guys are going to produce. And I think that maybe someone in the bottom of that lineup is going to get replaced at some point with a guy who is crushing the ball in AAA. And I looked at the counting stats the other day, and I was like, oh shit, like, Roman Anthony's not hitting the ball right now. And then you actually see that he's hitting the ball 100 miles an hour or harder pretty much every time he puts the ball in play. It's over 50% of the time. Like, he's dominating down there just based off of the batted ball profile. So it's like, yeah, for the next several weeks, like, yeah, I'm not expecting, like, they're going to need to show me something for me to regain confidence in the lineup. Longer term, I think it's going to be okay, because I think Casas is going to hit. I think Devers and Bregman, Duran has been terrible. He's going to hit at least more than he is now.
Yeah, he's not lifting the ball at all.
Yeah, and you add Roman Anthony into that. Like, I feel better about it. So I'm uncomfortable going above a 5, but based off of what I'm seeing right now, like, it is concerning. It really is concerning, and it's beyond to me. It's beyond the small sample size thing. I think if people want to go after these guys right now and say that they may not be as good offensively as you thought they were going to be, I think that's totally fair and on the table at this point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like we know who these guys are. I still maintain, I think the offense is going to be fine. This is just a really bad stretch. This happened twice last year. Twice, I remember, this offense just got ice cold. And that's the strikeouts. They can go ice cold just like that. You do have to be pushing the envelope a little bit more. I feel like they could even more try to run a little bit. They've already been running a lot, which I love, but I feel like they could do it a little bit more when they're this ice cold. And I can't believe I'm saying this. There are a few opportunities in the White Sox series where my brain was going, I wouldn't hate a bunt here. Hate a bunt, which I say.
And that's when you know, like, they're cold.
I say that maybe like 2 times a year. I'm a big anti-bunt guy, but
yeah,
the way they were going, it was so, so ice cold. Still ice cold. But now, you know, going to Tampa, we'll see if that small ballpark and nice weather heats them up.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more. And get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Could happen. Question for you guys before we get to the defense. When would you like, when is the point in time where you're like, let's get Roman Anthony up here? And do you feel uncomfortable bringing him up in a time like now? Because, you know, maybe he would feel like he needs to save the offense or something like that.
No, not for that reason. I think like we said, the issue with the offense right now is too many strikeouts. Roman Anthony, he is crushing the ball in AAA, but he's also striking out a lot. So I don't know if he's the fix at this moment. But at the same time, if they brought him up tomorrow, I'd be fucking thrilled. I think he'll be fine. I don't think he's gonna feel like he has to save the offense when he walks into the clubhouse and Bregman, Casas, Devers, Duran, I mean, they're all up there. He's not gonna be like, I gotta save these sad sacks of shit. It's on me. So yeah, I don't know when he comes up. I think it'll be an injury. And if it's not an injury, it would be kind of like if Rafael is really floundering out there and he can't get it together at all, then I think they maybe call up Anthony.
I'm so serious. It was last Friday. I'm ready for Roman to be up here. And I'm with Sammy. I don't think it's like a savior complex thing. I don't think this is like some desperate reach at straws for help. Like, he is major league ready. He is. He crushed every level last year. His batted ball numbers are through the roof. He hit a single today that was the hardest hit ball throughout the organization this year. I have never in my life been so sure of a prospect panning out and being a star as I am Roman Anthony. I truly believe, and I said this, actually, I don't know if I said it on here, but I said it definitely to you guys. He is like Kyle Tucker Jr. Like, years from now, like, that is my comp for Roman. I am beyond ready, because I'm going to be honest, and this is not a knock on him. I am done seeing late in games Sedan Rafaela swinging at pitches at his eyes, grounding out to shortstop. I'm done with it.
I think it's fair. I don't think there's a wrong answer for this either, because Sedan does enough away from the plate with his defense and his speed where if you want to ride that out, like, I think that's a fair opinion. And if you're sick of it, like Pat said, and to be fair, like I am most of the time, I think it's fair to say Roman Anthony should come up right now. He's shown that he's ready. So it's just a matter of what do you think the ideal time to bring him up is? The Sox have struggled mightily offensively, but the beauty of where they're at right now is they're 8-9, but they're only a game and a half out of first place. Like, the team that goes on a run here in the AL East, it doesn't, like, the Orioles are in last place at 6-9, 2.5 out. They could go on a run, and then they're the first place team. So there really is no wrong answer. I'd be totally fine bringing Anthony up soon. I just think he is going to be better for you than Rafaela. I think you're going to have to finagle with your lineups versus lefties and righties. It'll give you another guy to potentially sit against left-handed pitching, even though obviously I don't think Roman has splits issues, but that's just the way they've done it. When a guy comes up, he faces favorable pitching if he's a lefty, and that's just the way they do it. I hope it's soon. They've gone past the point of time where they can get the comp pick for him. I believe if they call him up now, he can't get the extra year of service time, if I'm not mistaken. Right? Like, unless he went rookie of the year.
Saturday was the day. Saturday was the day.
So, like, yeah, there's... So just go for it, man. And if he wins rookie of the year, like, yeah, he gets the full year of service time. But if he wins rookie of the year, then that means you did what was right for your organization and you played the best player that you could. Because if he wins the rookie of the year, then that means he played pretty fucking well.
Be cool if they had him debut against the White Sox next week at Fenway so he could face like more AAA pitch. I know they just shut the Red Sox down, but let's be real, that's mostly a AAA staff. If they're going to be aggressive, that's worth considering. I don't know if that's what I would do. Just I'd think about it.
So we got a couple things left to touch on. Any comments on the defense? I want to get to the pitching mainly. I mean, we can quickly touch on Newcomb, but not really much to say there. But any comments on the defense before we get there? It's been bad. Like, it needs to be better. I thought Story got better. I thought Story looked better in the series than he looked in the cold. And, like, obviously you can use it as an excuse. I think it's fair. I didn't think he looked that good defensively, but this series he definitely did. Bregman looked better. Campbell's still a work in progress. Costas definitely a work in progress. I'm maybe not quite as confident in Costas becoming the above average first base defender that I once was. I think it's fair to start questioning that one. Still think he's going to be a great all around hitter, and it's not worth like questioning him as a player, but as a defender, I think it's fair to question. Outfield defense is great. Catcher defense with Narvaez is good. With Sable, it's awful. That's where I'm at. I think it'll shake out. They'll end up being fine defensively. I don't think it's going to be a strength, but I don't think they're going to be like, they have the most errors in baseball. I don't think it's going to be like that all year.
No, I think Bregman and Story, I think they're both elite at their spots. I know they struggled with the cold, like you said, but whatever. I'm not reading into that. We have a full career on both guys to show they're elite. Campbell, Pat might have been onto something when he said he thinks Campbell's more of a left fielder. I still think he can handle second base. I think he'll be fine at second. He has moments where he'll make a play and you think, whoa, he looked really good over there. Robinson Cano. Just kidding. That's aggressive. But big second baseman. He looks good at times, but then he has, you know, like the other night with the botched double play with Story, where it's just there wasn't enough communication. Maybe you could blame Story on that. He's the veteran. He's the shortstop. Got to talk. But perspective-wise, it looked like it was Campbell who wasn't communicating on the play, but I don't know. And then, yeah, Costas.
Story was coming at him full speed. I don't know. You could look at it either way.
Yeah, it kind of got a nice.
It was definitely Campbell. Campbell's got to go to the base on that. Yep. But
yep. He's quicker.
He's played before this year. He'd played 85 games at second base starting in college. Like college, minor leagues, he'd played 85 games there.
Yeah.
And he's not an above average defender there right now. But no. This is a guy who is one of the faster learners in the sport and has improved rapidly at everything he's ever tried in the game. So I agree, Pat. I think he'd be better long-term in the outfield, but just because of the amount of outfielders this team has, I think he's best suited for second base, just purely based off of fit. If you can make it work, I think you live with the lumps and give him the year. And if he's improving, then you keep going with it. And if he doesn't, then you're going to have to work out something in the outfield. But the ideal lineup offensively is formulated if he's at second base. So I'm down to let him try and just improve, because I just think he's always done that.
Yeah. I think he'll be an average defender at second base when it's all said and done. But I agree with you, he's not average right now. And to wrap up the infield, yeah, Costas, I don't know. I keep saying I think he'll be a good defender, but he keeps proving me wrong. So we'll see, but it's first base. I can't really be bothered.
Yeah, I think you give Campbell a fair shake at second. You give him a fair shake until Marcelo's ready, because Marcelo is, he can't just rot down in AAA for the whole year. He can't. You're not likely going to move Story anywhere, especially with how he's playing. You give him a fair shake, and if he is not, I'm going to say above average defensively, because I think if Marcelo's at second, he is above average defensively.
Right away.
Immediately. Like, he is so smooth at short. Second, I don't have a single worry about him figuring that out. And then you get into the outfield kind of conundrum, right? Because if Marcelo comes up a couple months from now, let's say he goes to second, your outfield at that point, you're looking at one of Duran or Abreu plus Campbell plus Roman, and then Rafael on the super utility. It's a good problem to have, but you give Campbell a fair shake, and if he is not above average like Marcelo would be at second base, outfield. And I've said it from before he made his debut. I truly believe he is best suited as a corner outfielder, and that is not a knock on Campbell. I think he'd be an incredible defensive corner outfielder, and we know his bat plays. That's just me, and I truly believe that Marcelo handles second base, shortstop, even third if he needs to.
Yep.
Easily. He is so smooth.
You want to know what I would say about Campbell? The one thing I would change here with how they're going about this. I love versatility. I think versatility on a team is super important. You need multiple guys on the team that can play multiple positions. It allows you to optimize your lineup when guys get hurt, guys have off days. I get it. With a guy learning a position, like he's learning second base, and he's learning major league life too, make it easy on him. Let him play there every single day. Let him learn that position as best he can. I agree. You know, you want to get David Hamilton reps. Obviously, he's played pretty poorly this year. He hasn't hit at all. I get it. But play Christian Campbell at second base every day. Let him learn that position. Focus on that. He's clearly capable of hitting big league pitching. He still hasn't had a game where he hasn't reached base. Let him play second base.
Yep.
Let's get to the pitching real quick before we get to some Nuff Said. We'll go one by one here. First question, do you guys want to see Sean Newcomb start another game for this team?
No.
Yeah, ideally, no. I don't think he's as bad as people are making him out to be, but he's not. He's not been great.
Yeah, like I there's a lot of people, and I know Tristan Casas tried to take the blame for the game getting away with the error, but like, let's be real here. Sean Newcomb still got beat to death by the White Sox.
That's
where I'm at. In a perfect world, I would not see Sean Newcomb start another game for the Red Sox. To me, obviously, you'd love to see Bayo and Giolito back. I don't want them to rush those guys. I really hope they don't do that, but they might have to, because that brings me to the second guy, Richard Fitz, who in the midst of yet another awesome start, like this guy was proving to be, like, if you look at how good the Red Sox starting pitchers have been this year, number one, Crochet. Obvious number two is Richard Fitz. Is there any debate to that? He's been obviously their second best guy, and now pec strain. Pat, give the prognosis here on the pec strain after five scoreless from Fitz, and now he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the severity. It could be grade 1, 2, 3. It's not a full tear, so I'm not going to say 4. But if it's a mild one, I mean, you're looking at probably 2 weeks shut down. And then picking up throwing, bullpens, 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, maybe. Grade 2, a little bit bigger, maybe extended a week. Either way, you're not going to see Dick Fitz, I don't think, for at least 3 to 4 weeks. But that's just my guess. If it's a grade 1 and it's something super minor, super light, yeah, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. But I would guess a good solid month between time off, ramping up, and all that. It sucks. Just glad it's not his elbow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take a grade 1. Let's Dick Fitz, make it a grade 1 strain. That friggin' sucks, man. And he was cruising. I know it's the White Sox. Like, every time anyone does anything good against the White Sox, you get that, but it's the White Sox. I don't care. He looked great. He figured out the formula to get the White Sox out, throw high fastballs over and over and over again, and he was cruising. So, frustrating. I feel like they probably win that game. if he doesn't get hurt in the middle of it. It's just a big vibe swing on top of stuff. Vibes cast. We're always talking vibes. That was a very bad vibe swing. Yeah, man, it sucks. He has easily been the second best pitcher after Crochet. So, you know, good guy. Good to us. Wishing him the best. Hopefully he's back soon. Grade one. Give me that grade one strain.
Let me ask you guys a question on him. He say he comes back in 3 weeks, so he doesn't need like a huge ramp up or anything. And Giolito and Bayo are healthy by then. So your rotation at the time that Fitz gets healthy has some combination of Crochet, Hauk, Buehler, Bayo, and Giolito. How do you figure out what to do with Fitz? Do you put him in the rotation and roll six man? Do you put him in the rotation and bounce someone else? Do you option Fitz to AAA? Do you put Fitz in the bullpen? Like, it's such a premature discussion. And Rob and I were having this, I forget if it was on air or off air, but it was before Fitz got hurt. So it was going to be a discussion then. I feel like the answer is going to be determined A, by the health of the guys there, but B, by how long Fitz is out. Because if Fitz is out over a month, like to me, I think they probably bring him back as a reliever because they're going to need depth in that bullpen. Like the bullpen is going to wear thin fast.
I don't know about bringing him back as a reliever. That really, but what happens if a starter gets hurt? You're going to have to stretch him out again. And
yeah,
I don't know.
It's not ideal.
It's hard to say. It is a premature conversation for sure. I mean, Bayo could, you know, hopefully this doesn't happen, but you know, he could like hit a rut and have to do an extra AAA start. Same with Giolito. Giolito could look bad. Who knows, man? I mean, there's a lot of factors. Again, I want to say it again. This is a good problem to have too many arms, too many innings that need to be eaten. I know they're a little thin right now, but when these guys all get healthy, famous last words, a lot to go around. So I don't know. I don't know how you could use Fitz as anything other than a starting pitcher with the innings he's given this team. We all agreed he's been their second best starter. Yep. And this is a team that has struggled to find good starting pitching over the last few years. I'm pretty uncomfortable even like considering moving him to the bullpen, but there's going to have to be some sort of uncomfortable conversation at some point. And again, it feels like a trade eventually will happen. And I feel like this is probably the year we get like a blockbuster deadline trade with the Red Sox. Same with the bats, same situation. So I don't know. I have no clue how to answer that question. It depends on everyone else.
It's a tough question to answer right now. And the real answer probably is if someone's struggling, you make up an injury and put them on the fake IL and let Fitz have a few starts there. And then you can get guys rest by kind of taking turns, you know, skipping a couple of starts and you kind of maneuver your way until the obvious five-man rotation emerges. Like, because by the All-Star break or a little bit after, if a guy like Buehler is struggling and he struggled the whole year, if a guy like Giolito struggles the entire way, like, yeah, at that point, there's no problem removing a guy struggling from the rotation when you've given them multiple months to figure it out. If they're all pitching well, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I think you have to, pending Crochet, Hauk, Bayo, Buehler, Giolito are all healthy by the time that Fitz is good to go. It sucks, but you have to put him down in AAA, keep him stretched out, because inevitably there's going to be another injury. There's going to be another fandom IL stint. Don't forget about Cutter. Like,
yeah,
once Cutter comes back, he's probably your bulk reliever. But yeah, Fitz has been too good as a starter just to throw him in the bullpen and then try and restretch him out if an injury happens. To me at least, I like Cutter in that multi-inning role out of the pen whenever he gets healthy.
The Whitlock role?
The Whitlock role, yeah.
Me too. He's been good at that role in the past.
Yeah, I think that's why you got to roll with it. And then you keep kind of Fitz ready in the wings down in AAA, as much as it sucks because he's been so good. But like you said, the second someone's struggling for a prolonged period, if they need it for the playoffs, if they need it for the stretch, if someone just needs a phantom IL stint to get right, Fitz. You just got to keep him ready. It sucks, but AAA.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a premature conversation because let's be real, like something always happens. Like this conversation was going to have to be a thing this week. Like if Fitz hadn't gotten hurt, let's say he threw 6 1/3 scoreless, we would be talking about how do you take this guy out of the rotation with Bayo and Giolito coming back. Instead, now he's hurt. And now it's like, yeah, now it's Newcomb's going to get removed from the rotation. Maybe Hunter Dobbins makes a start and then he gets removed from the rotation and you got your guys. But before we get to enough said, I mean, we got to talk about Garrett Crochet a little bit. 7 1/3 no hit innings before letting up the single to Chase Mydroth. The run ended up getting in. Whitlock let him around. But up until that point, I mean, he was 5 outs away from pitching. And I'm not exaggerating here. One of the greatest games you would have ever seen pitched. If he threw a no hitter and let's say he ended up with 13 strikeouts and it was one walk, like how many no hitter, like there's been a bunch of no hitters. But how many no hitters have been thrown with 11 or more strikeouts? That's the question I have, because there's no hitters that, in my opinion, are better pitched games than perfect games.
Okay, here's a question. And I'm going to sound like an asshole because I just said I didn't like this, but I think it actually applies here. Would, if Crochet had thrown a perfect game or a no-hitter or whatever, 13 strikeouts, would the, it's the White Sox, would that be fair?
Yeah.
I feel like it would be in this situation. I mean, I just said I hate that, but like, but if you're comparing the quality of no-hitters, then you kind of have to consider the opponent. I just don't like when it's like, Story had 2 hits, and it's like, oh, but it was against the White Sox. It's like, come on. But like, yeah, those are no hitters. Yeah. Okay. I'm not crazy then.
No.
Just tired.
Yeah. I thought you meant if he threw a no hitter a perfect game, would it count because it was the White Sox? I'm like,
No.
I just mean the
ranking
quality
them
of
amongst,
it.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. I was
Gordo
like,
said it would have been one of the best. It would have been one of the best. Pitching performances in Red Sox history, I think, for sure. But we're not here to talk about hypothetical pitching performances.
Yeah,
he was
what
great.
Happened.
He was great. I think Richard Fitz kind of, and Will Fleming alluded to this. Maybe it was Cooper Boardman. Might have been Cooper. By the way,
shout out Cooper Boardman.
Yeah, MLB debut. Good shit, man.
Great dude.
One of them on the radio broadcast I was listening to on Sunday kind of spoke about how Richard Fitz kind of, you know, set the formula for how to get the White Sox out. It's just pound the zone with fastballs. Fastball, fastball, fastball. They won't catch up. Crochet probably saw that and went, oh, I got one of those. I got a fastball. Check this out, motherfucker. And yeah, not even close. Embarrassing for the White Sox lineup. That's how it should have been all 3 games. But glad we got to at least see it once. And lastly, on Crochet, I love how he totally no-sold the White Sox when they asked, is there extra motivation? He was like,
nah. At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Okay, let's get to enough said. Anyone want to go first?
I can go first.
Pat, you want it?
Yep. Not really enough said. It's just going to be more kind of me reciting some fun numbers. And by fun numbers, I mean the ERA of pitchers in the Yankees staff. Marcus Stroman, 11.57. Ian Hamilton, 9. Devin Williams, superstar closer. Gave up a pretty good package for him. 9. 49-year-old Carlos Carrasco, who's in their rotation, 7.71. Ryan Yarbrough, 5.63. The big money man himself, Carlos Rodon, the new de facto co-ace with Max Fried, 5.19. Will Warren, 5.14. Tim Hill, lefty stud, should have thrown instead of Nestor in the World Series, 4.76. Mark Leiter, who's taken over some save opportunities because Devin Williams sucks, 4.76.
Fernando Cruz, who they got for Jose Trevino from Cincinnati, 4-2-6. The Yankees have the worst starting pitching rotation ERA in baseball. In baseball.
Mm. That's rough.
I want to dance on that, but the equivalent to that is the Red Sox offense. So I feel like I can't, but I want to.
Dude, that's bad. The Sox have had some bad games. That Cardinal series alone probably puts them in the top like 12 runs per game offense.
But that's what makes me. That's like if you take out the one game, like where do they rank? Oh, I don't.
You can't take out the one game. That's a good thing. And you also can't take back the wind because my Nuff said is that Trevor Story actually should have had 2 home runs according to StatCast. His double that went off the wall was knocked down by 15 feet, which was the difference between a home run and a double. So I'm going to call it a 2 home run game for Trevor Story unofficially. Congrats to Trevor, his first 2 home run game in a long time. No shot. I remember the last time he did that. Maybe the White Sox series from 2 years ago. Who knows? Who cares? But 2 home runs for Trevor Story on Sunday. What a monster. This is my stud shortstop. Respect him.
Joe, you said you had enough said. I'm going last, so if you want it, you go now.
All right. I'm going to say it because I think Pat and I are the only ones who respect it. Shout out Rory McIlroy for finally getting that Grand Slam, the People's Champion. I was telling these guys while Gordo was having his little tech issues going to his daddy's house how basically it had been 11 years since Rory had won a major, and he had been it was his 11th attempt to get that Grand Slam and like his 17 times at the Masters before then.
Yep.
Watching that end was great, but it was also so anxiety ridden. Pat, back me up on this. There were chances he should have won it, and then he blew it, and then he went to the playoff and he won. So, but it's a happy ending for Rory.
Yeah. Hard not to feel good for Rory. Also, if you want like a really, really good video of a legit, like, I don't even know what I could think of to like compare it to, but if you want like a really good video of somebody celebrating something that they've literally been playing for and praying for and hoping for a decade, watch his celebration on the green. Fist pumping into the grass, screaming, crying. It's awesome. Congratulations, Rory.
The minute he launched the putter and then just broke down, it's like, that's it. That's such a good.
Can we back up? He hadn't won anything in 11 years.
He hadn't won a major in 11 years.
This guy sucks.
11 years.
He's only the sixth guy. He's only the sixth guy to win every major. So he's in elite company.
He became the second player in golf to win a Grand Slam in 50 years. It's literally him and Tiger Woods.
Wow. That is
you guys just don't understand the game, man.
I'm not a big golf guy, but if there's one thing I know about golf, if you hit it, you putt it.
Me and Pat are going to take you guys out, and we're going to have a foursome round of golf.
I fucking suck at golf. I suck.
I've never golfed. I've never even tried it. I've never played a single hole of golf.
This is going to be fun.
Guys, here's my golf story.
I'm going to dominate.
I thought I was a righty. I golfed righty for years, like for 5 or 6 years before realizing that I actually should have been golfing lefty. And I found out on Pine Hills.
Oh, God.
What?
Pine Hills is not the place to do that. Just as an FYI.
I know. Dude, I know. It was a disaster.
I've done a driving range.
And you've done mini golf, right?
And I've done mini golf, yeah.
There you go.
You've done it all. You've based 2 out of 3. You know what you're doing.
Go ahead and put me on the PGA Tour.
Yeah. You'll beat Rory. That guy's a bum.
Yeah. Oh, look at me. I haven't won shit in 11 years.
Yeah, 11 years? Come on. Fuck that, man. You can do that.
I was 40 back then.
Yeah. All right. We got to get out of here. So I'll give my Nuff said real quick. Shout out to you guys because I put you guys through the ringer to get this podcast. Appreciate the grind on everyone here's part. I just moved. Don't have Wi-Fi. The Xfinity people. It's a disaster. With the game today, for whatever reason, the first two games, my mobile hotspot was able to support it on the TV and it was okay. With the Crochet game, it was jumping around. It was freezing. I was getting a black pinwheel. Like, it was a disaster. 1 second, it would be an 0-0 count. The next second, Crochet will have already struck the guy out. It was just, it was complete craziness. And so I go back from the Seder tonight, and I thought the Wi-Fi could work. Hotspot didn't work. Xfinity Wi-Fi didn't work. Tried to do it on my phone. It worked for 5 minutes. Then it didn't. Had to drive to my dad's. These guys are waiting the entire time. They got early mornings. So shout out to you guys. Much appreciated waiting so that we could get the full squad for the show. And shout out to my dad for letting me do it at his house.
It's all good, man. We were just making Joe watch MMA highlights. He was like, oh, ew.
I can picture it.
Where are the playing children?
Joe, give me the reaction again. All right, thanks for tuning in to episode 198 of Playtesty. Remember, you can get all these podcasts by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts and rating 5 stars. We really appreciate when you guys do that. Find us on YouTube on the WEI page. Find the Playtesty playlist there. Hit the thumbs up on all the videos and find us on the socials at Playtesty on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it's Gordo here for Playtesty. Appreciate you guys tuning in for this one. We'll have an interview dropping for you guys on Wednesday, so keep your eyes peeled for that. Till then, though, thanks for tuning in to this one. Peace.